The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
All right, a busy, busy day. We have an IG report to sift through. We have a Texas GOP convention to talk about. Dallas County Chair Missy Shorey was with us. And as county chair, she can't really come out and say whom she wants to see win the state chairperson's race. I think Tom Giovanetti will not be similarly restrained when he joins us at 9:05. And Congressman Roger Williams with us in just half a shake here on last night's congressional baseball game. But let's add a little baseball flavor to our exercise we always do at this time. It's Friday.
Ah, I feel good. I feel good. Ow! I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good?
I feel good. I would not. So good. So good. I got a year. Wow.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Party some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
Johnny Resnick and the Goo Goo Dolls with a slightly updated Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Well, a bunch of people came out to Nationals Park in D.C. for the congressional baseball game last night. And boy, was that an opportunity to look back 1 year, a little over a year, at the shooting at the practice where a lunatic shows up and tries to kill Republicans and nearly succeeded in taking out one, Steve Scalise. And other people were injured that day, including Texas Congressman Roger Williams. The diving into the dugout as the bullets flew. Just an incredible and dark story that was turned mere days later into a unifying, wonderful image. Last year's game was held immediately afterward, and now 1 year later, a chance to reflect again. Congressman Roger Williams is with us. Welcome, sir. How you doing?
I'm good, Mark. How are you this morning?
I am wonderful. And it turns out that there may, in fact, when people look back at 2018, there was one blue wave. And it was in the form of runs scored by the Democrats. Roger, 21-5. Come on.
Well, I know. We lack some defense. That's all I can tell you, Mark. But our guys worked hard, and we actually hit the ball. But last night we didn't play much defense. Mm-hmm. No matter what league you're in, if you can't catch the ball, things are not going to happen.
That is
to you.
It. But, there was one put out. I want to say that it was the very first out of the game, a sharp liner to the second baseman. And tell me about that.
Well, it was unbelievable. You know, baseball is a sport that has a way of making moments. It really does. And last night, we started Steve Scalise at second base, and Steve and I had talked, and what he wanted to do was be out there for two hitters and then come on off the field. And we got him. He took the field, and the first batter hit a line drive. I'm not talking about a slow roller, a line drive to him that he literally scooped up on one hop and fired to the first baseman. And it was magical. I mean, it was Ted Williams hitting the home run his last time at bat. I mean, it was that kind of thing. And you couldn't have written a script. I mean, it's about a book. You could write a book on just that one moment. So that was the moment. And the second moment, too, was we raised over $1 million for charity.
That's what counts.
Which is what it's all about.
That's
so I'm so proud of Steve.
Well, listen, really, truly helped me out with something, because I read those stories and I thought, What? Because how many, was it a couple of months ago, 2-3 months ago, that you and I and Kay Granger and Michael Burgess were in a wonderful room at the Fort Worth Club talking to some supporters about various things going on. It was a pleasure to host all of you guys in a kind of an impromptu panel thing, and your folks threw it together. And it was a chance to, always a joy to be with you and your family, but it was a chance to be around Steve in an extended fashion. Mm-hmm. And he was great. I love him. But Roger, he was on crutches. I mean, he could walk, but he was on crutches. Has there been some amazing rehab progress, or I mean, what's going on with Steve?
Well, you know, God works in strange ways sometimes, and Steve has made an unbelievable recovery, and I think he'd be the first to tell you he's not 100% yet, but he was able to get on the field with the help of the two agents that saved our lives, Griner and Bailey. They helped him get out to second base, and then when we started the game, he was a second baseman with no help at all. All he had was his glove. This line drive came to him, and he scooped it up and threw the runner out at first base.
There you go.
And then after the second hitter, I went out there along with Cedric on the other side, then Brad Winstrup, the doctor that saved his life on the field,
my.
And we took him back off the field, and it was very emotional.
That is absolutely tremendous. Now, obviously, it's very much about the night and about the cause and about the raising of money. And but your mind had to flash back to last year's game and a little more than 1 year ago, last year's attack at the practice field in Alexandria. That still has echoes, doesn't it?
Well, it does. It was like it was yesterday for all of us, actually. And I think it just showed, I mean, that was a dark day for our country and, frankly, the world. And we played the game the next night, and then we played the game last night just showing that America has resiliency. And we went from taking a punch in the gut last year to playing this ball game again and standing tall, and showing the world you can mess with us, but you're not going to beat us.
That's it.
And
well,
through baseball, we did that last night.
Yes, you did. So glad to get the update on that. In our couple of remaining minutes, let's talk about some stuff in the news. How about that IG report? Holy cow.
Well, that's pretty powerful. I'm waiting to, you know, they're going to have to come up here on the Hill and talk about it. So we're all waiting to learn more about it. But I just think it shows that all the time we've been talking about all this, it was not a one-way street. It was a two-way street. The other side was working hard to keep us from winning.
Is there what does the road back to? Because if everyone has been saying, as President Trump has been particularly sharp in his criticisms, and you have and I have, none of us, not one of us, from the president to you to me, not one of us has said the entire FBI is rotten to the core or this is pervasive or epidemic. No, there is a ribbon of corruption that has tightened itself around the FBI and the Department of Justice, or back under the Loretta Lynch days they did anyway. So it's a small but pernicious problem. What's the road back to accountability for the FBI?
Well, you're right. I mean, it's not the majority of the FBI people, but it is at the top, and they've got to be those folks that have not taken their business seriously and done it fairly have got to be they've got to be taken care of. I mean, they can no longer be in those positions, and the new culture has to begin, and that's what we're going to be starting here next week when they come up on the Hill. But it's the FBI, for crying out loud, something that we rely on in this country to keep things fair and square. And it hadn't been that way, and it's got to be changed.
It does indeed. Last thing, you're a business guy. I am a business supporting guy. You're an actual business guy with your history in the private sector. Let us stipulate that we're loving every day of the Trump presidency. We talk about this every once in a while when it hits the news. What are we supposed to do about the tariffs thing? And the China says we're going to raise $50 billion on you guys. That might not be my favorite thing on the Trump agenda. I love everything else. But what's your thought on the trade policies?
Well, I agree with the president on a lot of things, but I just don't agree with the tariffs. I think that America, it can be and is the strongest country through competition. That's why cutting taxes is so important. Cutting regulations is so important. That will allow people to be very successful over here, come over here, stay over here and be successful. Tariffs, I don't believe, are the answer. We just gave everybody a tax cut, Mark, and it's working. People have more money in their pocket. We don't need to take it away in raising their taxes. So I hope the president will take a hard look at this. And I get it about China. They're not fair. But we can, through less regulation, lower taxes, we can dominate the world economy.
And we have not spoken since the Singapore summit. I mean, I know that Kim Jong-un's an evil dictator. I know North Korea is an evil regime. A lot of people are obsessing that maybe too much deference was shown to them. That's part of the Trump deal making, is you slather on the butter, you cozy up to folks in order to get from them in the long game what your goals are.
Well, that's right. And I thought the summit went well. And there was high expectations, low expectations. But for goodness sake, he got this guy at the table. They were able to talk. They were able to shake hands. They were able to learn about each other. Now we're talking about bringing remains home of POWs that have been lost. We're talking about moving embassies. It's just unbelievable what he's done in a short period of time. So those that say that he hasn't done the job or he should have done this, where were they? Where were they when it should have been done in the past administration? So I think he's doing a great job, and we stand behind him when it comes to North Korea.
All righty. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Great game last night. Great opportunity to raise money for charity, and great to hear about it from you. So much appreciate it. And listen, for a family man, happy Father's Day. Great family for you, Roger, and just appreciate you so much.
Thank you, Mark. Same to you.
You bet. God bless. Congressman Roger Williams. All right. In fact, one thing about some of the summit footage, because obviously the White House put out some of its favorite video moments. North Korea has put out some of its favorite video moments. It's like a 45-minute thing, just like everything Kim Jong-un did. Here he is eating a biscuit on the plane. I mean, you know, here he is brushing his teeth. It was quite fawning of Marshall Kim. There's one bit of video footage that has everybody twisting off. You can see a freeze frame of President Trump saluting North Korean General No Kwang Choi in full uniform. What you doing? Obama was, kissing the ring and bowing and saluting, blah, 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 blah. Isn't this the same thing? No, it's not. Here's the deal. Let's take it frame by frame. It still might not be your favorite. In fact, let me ask you, what would you do? What are you supposed to do? The president is working his way down a line, down a colonnade to shake various hands. They both walk into a room filled with various members of the North Korean delegation. And the president is shaking hands with everybody along that line. Shake a hand, shake a hand, shake a hand. He gets to North Korean General No Kwang Choi. He extends his hand to shake a hand. The general does not, in fact, do so. The general does not extend his hand to be shaken, but instead salutes President Trump, a military-style salute. Ba-boom. Bam, you're Trump. What do you do? Well, he saluted back. You salute me, I'll salute you. Now, next. Now, if indeed your position is under no circumstances should the American president salute a North Korean general, all right. What should he do? Stand there and stare at him? You know, stand there and just glower at him with an unreturned salute? I mean, maybe. I don't know. Maybe stick his hand back out as if to say, well, you can salute me if you want to. I'm more of a handshake guy. I mean, okay, that's a conversation that we can have. But that's what actually happened. It was not the notion of it was just an act of common reciprocal courtesy. And here's the most important thing as we break. The most important thing. Because across the broader landscape of observations, as people have heard conservatives generally cheer the president's outreach to North Korea and react favorably to the summit, many have made the observation, if Obama did this, you'd be hating it. You know, when Obama reached out to various other regimes, y'all conservatives hated it. And the answer is, yes, we did, because we knew that if Barack Obama was doing it, that it was driven by appeasement and apology and subjugation of American interests. If President Trump visits a China, engages in the beginnings of dialogue with North Korea or anything like this, it is with his beacon, his fixed position, which is always to have American interests first. Nobody ever believed that with Barack Obama. It was globalism and apologizing for America and appeasing tyrants and terrorists. So, yeah, there's a palpable difference between Barack Obama traveling the world and Donald Trump doing the same. All right, your thoughts, please. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 821.
I've always been crazy in the trouble that it's put me through.
Waylon's birthday. That's all you need to know.
Been busted for things that I did and I didn't do.
From 1978, from the album of that title, I've Always Been Crazy.
I can't say I'm proud of all of the things that I've done. But I can say I've never been
to go grab a Waylon album here on your iTunes or your downloads or whatever you do. I've Always Been Crazy is a really great one from 1978 because he does a cover of Johnny Cash's I Walk the Line, a cover of Merle Haggard's Tonight the Bottle Let Me Down. I've Always Been Crazy is a song that Waylon wrote himself, as well as one of my favorite this, because remember, it's 1978 and Waylon writes, "Don't you think this outlaw bit's done got out of hand?" That was paying the bills for Waylon. Waylon would have been 81 today, but passed away back in 02. Alrighty, 866-660-5759. I didn't necessarily envision this as I explained the Trump salute of the North Korean general. General salutes him. He saluted him back. Not like he proactively decided, hey, I'm going to honor this tyrant in the manner of the Obama bow to the royal family and et cetera, et cetera. But we're getting some reaction on that. So let's go. We're in DeSoto. James, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks.
Hey, I did 22 years in the Air Force.
Thank you.
And the salute has a main foundation, and that foundation is the salute is a raising of the arm. Back in the long time ago when a knight would raise his visor,
right.
I am unarmed and I come in peace.
Right.
The general saluted first. The general said a statement by doing so, I am unarmed and I come in peace.
And it was, and to return it is an acknowledgement, a show of basic courtesy. Now, two things, and thank you, James, two things. If President Trump had come up to the general and saluted the general first, then you kind of got a point. And here's the other very important point. Let's say Barack Obama is out there in North Korea, and let's stipulate that if Barack Obama's out in North Korea, look out, because it's appeasement, apology, and the usual Barack Obama list of behaviors. But if the general had saluted Barack Obama and President Obama saluted back, it would be our job not to roast him, not to blast him, as many I'm sure would, but I would have been the guy sitting here saying, look, I've seen President Obama subjugate American interests all over the world, but that was just a show of common courtesy. But guess what? Barack Obama's not president. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. 8:30, Mark Davis into the newsroom. Here's Gordon Griffin, and then back on the phones with you at 866-660-5759. All right, I'm going to do this because it's Harry Nielsen's birthday. He would have been... oh, golly, 77, born in 1946. He passed away in 1994. Nielsen was a big friend of John Lennon and a songwriter of great import, and had an album in 1971 called Nielsen Schmielsen. Just shows him in a kitchen, you know, looking disoriented, standing there in a robe. But the big hit off of that, of course, is Without You. Can't Live If Living Is Without You, which he didn't even write. It was written by Pete Ham of Badfinger. But on that album is an earworm for the ages. An earworm is something you hear and it works its way around your brain and you just can't let it go. This one, and I'm about to do this for you, it's probably already there. If it's not, it soon will be. This, it's a masterpiece that's been wound around my brain since I was 13 years old. O'clock this afternoon, walking out of an elevator, you're gonna walk into a crowd of six people, gonna be singing this.
Now let me get this straight. You put the lime in your coconut, you drink 'em, pour it up, put the lime in the
The lyrics are not challenging. Drink them both together. Then what? Then you feel better. I mean, it's and that Nielsen Schmielsen album is such a weird tapestry of various different things, because you've got the quirky, you know, faux island reggae of Coconut, and just a rocker like Jump Into the Fire, and a power ballad like Without You. This was a really talented dude, Harry Nielsen, who would have been 77 today. Nielsen Schmielsen, the album from 1971. All righty, 866-660-5759. As we return to your calls, we are in Emory, Texas. Hey, Harold, how are you? Oh, hang on a second. There's my button.
Yeah. Hi, Harold. Army veteran?
Yes, sir.
And military etiquette is such that the person in the inferior position initiates the salute. The superior person returns that salute. So Trump was absolutely correct in returning that man's salute.
As a basic of common courtesy. And again, if President Trump, working his way down the line, shaking hands, if he had gotten to the North Korean general and saluted first, that's problematic.
That is correct, because he's in the superior position.
Yep.
As our commander.
Exactly. I mean, the president doesn't even really, he'll return the occasional salute from like one of his own generals, obviously. But you've covered the salute etiquette beautifully. And thank you. All right. Let me do another call or two. And then as the week comes to an end, we have simply got to get to this insane hand-wringing and tooth-gnashing about what's happening at the border, the separation of kids from their parents. Look, is it possible that we need to find a way to improve the optics of this? Maybe. But the fundamentals are really clear. And that is, if you find yourself getting misty about the separation of kids from their parents as they illegally cross into the United States, guess what the solution is? Come on, you know, say it with me. Don't enter the United States illegally. Having started this paragraph, let me just go ahead and give you, it starts, of course, with Jim Acosta. And then this is about 30 seconds of Sarah Sanders at the lectern in the White House press room yesterday.
Say in the Bible that it's moral to take children away from their mothers.
Jim Acosta, where in the Bible does it say that it's moral to take children away from their mothers? That Acosta is a piece of work, man.
I can say that it is very biblical to enforce the law.
The exchange is turning contentious.
I know it's hard for you to understand, even short sentences, I guess, but please don't take my words out of context.
Go ahead. Come on, Sarah, you're a parent. Don't you have any empathy for what these people are going through? They have less than
Ryan,
you do. That's serious.
I'm trying to be serious, but I'm not going to have you yell out of turn.
But even the president's allies joining in the opposition.
We don't want kids to be separated from their parents.
Well, nor do I. And the way to prevent this is a parental behavior problem. It is a consequence of parental ill wisdom. And the way to keep all of these lovely families together is to compel them to stay in their own country and not break the laws of the United States. That is the root of the problem. So all these folks who are obsessing about the separation of kids from their parents, you have to understand, this is not out of caring for children. Please, don't be stupid. This is about smoothing the path for amnesty, smoothing the path for illegal immigration. Because what happens if we do not, in fact, separate the kids from the parents? That keeps the whole nuclear family there together as they enter illegally into the United States. The kid is Teflon. The kid thus becomes a pawn that can be used by the left, or even soft borders Republicans, of which there are many, in order to try to grease the path of illegal immigrants into the tapestry of American life. The solution has its solution at its root, and that is the moment at which a parent says, I'm going to enter the United States illegally, and let's take the kids. That is a bad moment of decision-making. Our job as a country is to get people to think better than that idea, is to get people to decide not to enter the United States illegally. A wall would be a good idea to improve their clarity on this. All right, multiple topics, 866-660-5759. We are in Bluffdale. Hey, Robert, how are you? Welcome.
Good morning, Mark.
What's up?
Good to talk to you.
Hi.
Yeah, let me start out by setting the table just a little bit. There's a popular television prop. It's the court board with the pins and the pictures and the yarn going back and forth.
You bet.
And if you go with that, excuse me, I'm a little winded. I'm on the job site. I contend that Jeff Sessions is that insurance policy that is spoken of. Insurance policies are not amorphous ideas. They're specific things.
Right.
And I think Jeff Sessions is that specific thing.
Tell me, describe the metaphor, if you will, please. I know what you mean. In what way does Attorney General Sessions meet that definition?
It is that if you take all those pieces of yarn, everything that the left is trying to do completely unravels. If a courageous and active and thoughtful Attorney General is doing his job.
Yeah.
That's just a fact.
I'm with you on that. And moving forward, I think we'll probably see that from Attorney General Sessions. It baffles me. The recusal was the opposite of that. His needless, unsupportable recusal that gave birth to this entire monster baby that is the Mueller probe. I have a hard time getting past that, but I'm a big believer in redemption. So if Sessions can do it, good for him.
Well, just remember this, that Jeff Sessions has a long, in fact, longer than his congressional service, is his association with the FBI. That goes back a very long
way. I know.
You know, when I heard that Jeff Sessions was his first supporter, it was one of those things where you go, what? What kind of strange bedfellow is this? And and I maintain that Sessions and Ray are not going to do the right thing. That ain't going to happen.
Well, why not? What's your level of suspicion there? I mean, I can understand. I mean, just tell me what it's based on.
Well, I mean, part of it is the fact that and where did Christopher Ray come from?
Where has he been? He walks in to do a news after the IG report. It's like, oh, you are showing up for work.
Well, where was he all this time? I know. I heard someone say that he's hiding in his office, and that is exactly what's been going on.
It is, and yet there's a part of me that says, you know, if you are just trying to be the Boy Scout to clean this up and the good guy to come in and clean house, maybe you don't need to be doing daily press conferences. But you know what? This is an era of visibility and transparency, and the uncomfortable thing for Christopher Wray, the current FBI director, is that if he was out doing all kinds of press availabilities, he'd be asked questions constantly about the horrible things that happened in the FBI before he ever got there. And he probably doesn't want to dwell on that. He'd probably be more of a forward thinking figure.
I like my hiding in his office.
Yeah. Well, I do too. It works. All right. Well, listen, thanks. Best to everybody in Bluffdale down in Erath County between Granbury and Stephenville. Appreciate you. 866-660-5759. We're in Euless. Clark, Mark Davis, happy Friday. How you doing?
Hey, happy Friday to you, Mark. I'm doing great.
Good.
Hey, the answer to the separating the kids from their parents question is so simple. I wish Sarah Sanders would use it, and Paul Ryan and all these other people. That why are the Democrats so concerned about that? But every day when a U.S. citizen breaks the law, and that citizen is then sent to jail for breaking said law,
right,
they're separated from their kids.
Yes. I mean, shall we have let's have hand-wringing, you know, hanky-filled exercises today when a man is criticized is convicted for bank robbery or a woman is locked up for embezzlement or a violent crime or nonviolent crime or a drug offense or whatever. At some point, if mommy or daddy has to go to jail, that's a family separation. It's called what happens when somebody in the family breaks the law.
Bingo. And so the whole argument should then be the Democrats are the anti-American citizen party. They rally for the rights for illegal aliens, but man, they'll let American citizens be abused all day long.
You are correct, sir, and thank you. And as Sarah says, as they try to beat up on Sarah Sanders, Sarah, you're a mom, you're a parent. How can you stand for this? And I don't need to be putting words in Sarah Sanders' mouth. She does a wonderful job. However, on this one particular occasion, I might have said, look, if you're going to try to lord over me with my parental status, let me tell you that it is my role as a mom. It is my title as a parent that makes me care for parents and kids all over this country whose lives are made more difficult by illegal immigration, when the rule of law is sneezed upon, when our social networks are strained by wave upon wave of illegal immigrants. I do care about kids, sir. I care about the kids who already are American citizens. I care about the families who already are here legally. Those are the ones I care about first. Next question. 850, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. Our birthdays today, Waylon Jennings, Kansas frontman Steve Walsh, and this guy. Mama, we're all crazy now. The early 70s British swilling rock of Slade. Their frontman, Noddy Holder. It's just a great name. Noddy Holder is Noddy is 77. Bless his heart. All righty. As we roll into the 9 o'clock hour, Tom Giovanetti of the Institute for Policy Innovation is down at the Republican Convention, State Republican Convention in San Antonio. I want to check in with him on a couple of things. We have a battle that'll get decided apparently within the next couple of hours as to who's going to be the next GOP state chairperson. And it may come down to a battle of who has been the more consistent and reliable Trump supporter. Because after all, everything is seen through the lens. And you know what? That's not a bad thing. When you say, oh, it seems it's the party of Trump and everything is seen through loyalty to Trump. Guess why? It's not some fealty. It's not some, you know, worshipful thing. It's appreciation of results. There is no more effective thing you can do to prove your conservative street cred than to say, you know what? This most conservative leadership we've had since Reagan is something I like and I support. If you're willing to do that, bam, your conservatism is instantly supported in an evidentiary way. If you're hemming and hawing, I don't like the tweets or I don't like it, blah, 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 blah. Listen, if you're blanching on the trade policies, understand that because I don't know if I like those either. But by and large, overall, if you don't have a general broad appreciation of what this guy's done, then it's your conservatism that needs a hard look in the mirror. 858, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.